Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, for this week's Jolly Heretic, I thought that rather than making one of my usual light-hearted introductions, it would be more appropriate instead to make a formal statement on what I'm going to talk about in this video, which is the rather serious subject of terrorism and the future likelihood, indeed inevitability, of terrorism becoming more and more frequent in the West in this coming century. So I have had drafted for me something rather important and serious that I need to say. Let me be absolutely clear on this. I utterly reject all forms of political violence. There is a major difference between purely academic discussion of the roots of violence in society and the actual endorsement of such behaviour. Nothing that I am going to say in this video should for a moment be taken as advocacy, justification, or celebration of acts of terrorism or violence of any kind from any group directed at any group. And though I thoroughly expect Machiavellian anti-science political organisations on the left, such as Hope Not Hate, to willfully ascribe malevolent intention behind my words, because they seem to believe that if you think something is the case, you must want it to be the case, because that is true of them, as doing so advances their own politically motivated narrative against the science that we discuss on this channel. Nevertheless, I find the very notion absurd that someone will construe anything I have ever said on this channel as enticing violence. Furthermore, I have complete confidence in the overwhelming majority of my audience at the Jolly Heretic to readily agree with the basic moral suppositions that hold together civilization, including eschewing political violence. But with just about any large online community, there will always unfortunately be nutcases. I have noticed in the past comments left on some of my videos that could be interpreted as soliciting violence or other such behaviour, what is commonly known as Fed posting among the young people, and worse still, on the basis of misrepresenting my words. I utterly disavow these kinds of comments. They are dangerous and unacceptable, and whether these are intended in jest or not is irrelevant. Even Fed posting, ironically, creates an existential risk to the future of civilization, and I will do whatever it takes to end it. Indeed, I have preemptively removed these kinds of comments accordingly. So, let us be clear that in hypothetical extreme cases of this, where someone actually discusses real names and details as required by law, I will deal with it accordingly. Fortunately, I have only dealt with one or two cases of relatively minor Fed posting on this video so far, so credit to the good maturity of most of my audience, and I'm ever grateful to you for this. Thank you. Right. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, what I want to talk about today is a rather sensitive topic, and that is the topic of terrorism and the growth of terrorism in the future of the West as the West declines into anarchy. Now, it should be noted that we do spend a huge amount of our money on terrorism. Between the year 2006 and the year 2016, America spent 5% of GDP, $641 billion, or something along those, $664.1 billion on fighting terrorism. The UK spent 2% of its GDP. Other countries spent on average about 2% of their GDP on fighting terrorism or safety and related things. Now, of course, in a normal civilization, you shouldn't need to spend any of your money on these things because people will be high in trust and they will be cooperative and there will be no terrorism. Most recent wars have been essentially about dealing with countries that incubate terrorism. What the result of these wars is, of course, is to prevent higher levels of terrorism in Western countries. But the reality is that the people that live in these countries start to hate us even more and regard us as imperialistic. And, of course, it radicalises those who sympathise with those countries because their parents or whatever are from those countries back home. You could argue that the triumph of the Taliban, the war in Afghanistan, was originally about stopping a country that was incubating terrorism. It has degenerated into complete chaos. This is likely to embolden the Taliban and simply make terrorism worse. If we look at Islamist terrorism, extremist Muslims and their terrorism, between 2012 and 2019, there were on average 6 attacks per year. Now, this has declined now due to the decline in ISIS, and there is some evidence of a correlation between the rise of ISIS and the rise of terrorist action. It has also declined because of lockdown. Obviously, if you're doing things in the street during lockdown, you will be noticed more and they may be more likely to get in trouble with the authorities. So therefore, terrorists haven't taken the risk of being caught. But basically, there is a low level, there is a risk of terrorism all the time, both from Islamists, but also from people on the extreme right of politics, as noted in the assassination of Joe Cox during the Brexit campaign, and also from people on the extreme left of politics, as noted in various peaceful protests and actions involved there. So this is a growth in terrorism. And my argument is that we will see more and more terrorism as we slide into the collapse of civilization. Now, why is this the case? Well, the main reason is because the far left and the far right and what we might call foreign terrorism or terrorism involving ethnic minority groups essentially feed off each other. They are of a similar mentality, and they are of a mentality that we can expect to grow, to increase as in prevalence in the population as we go into decline. Now, let's go back again to what we've talked about on this channel so many times, which is what the Industrial Revolution has done to the gene pool. We were under selection until 1800 for a number of pleiotypically related adaptive traits, specifically intelligence, but also pro-social personality, because we were fighting with other groups and the group that was more likely to dominate the other group would be high in positive ethnocentrism and high in negative ethnocentrism, as computer models have demonstrated. In order to be internally cooperative, you had to be high in pro-social personality, high in altruism, high in empathy, in-group directed, obviously, but also high in conscientiousness and agreeableness, and you had to be relatively low in mental instability. You had to be relatively mentally stable. All of these things are pleiotypically related. One of the things that we were selecting for under harsh Darwinian selection pressures was religiousness and conservatism. These things correlate with low mental instability genetically. They correlate with agreeableness. They correlate with conscientiousness. And they also correlate with other adaptive traits, such as wanting to have children, such as having children, such as physical health, such as mental health, and so on. So we were selecting on average, for a person who was high in mental stability, high in agreeableness, high in conscientiousness. We were effectively selecting for a slow life history strategist. And there is some evidence that that is basically what religious people are. They are slow life history strategists. Remember, we all exist on a spectrum. At one extreme, you have the fast life history strategist. He has evolved to an unstable yet easy ecology in which he lives fast and dies young because you could be wiped out at any second. He invests all his energy in sex. He invests nothing in nurture. And he basically pumps and dumps and hopes that some offspring survive. As it becomes harsher yet more stable, then if you act in that way, then all of your, if offspring aren't in any way nurtured or looked after or pointed on the right evolutionary roadmap to this harsh competitive environment, then the result is they could all just die. So you take energy away from sex and you start investing energy in nurture. In that kind of context, you're more likely to survive if you're more agreeable and more cooperative, because there is a predictability. Cooperative acts could be reciprocated, higher in impulse control, higher in mental instability. You'll get on with other people better. You'll create a larger group. You'll be more likely to survive, you'll be selected for, you'll compete better in the ecology, because one of the things that predicts socioeconomic status is intelligence, agreeableness, conscientiousness, mental stability on average. And so therefore, people become slow life history strategists adapted to a stable, cooperative, pro-social environment. Now, with the collapse of Darwinian selection, you see a deviation from this in a number of ways. First of all, its selection for intelligence collapses and we start to become less intelligent. Now, what does low intelligence predict? It predicts being extreme. It predicts thinking in a black and white way. It predicts being antisocial. It predicts being low in empathy, and it predicts low trust. Because if you are a high in intelligence, then you will be able to correctly judge whether to trust people. If you're low in intelligence, you won't be able to. So it's best to trust nobody. And it also predicts paranoia. You also will get a rise in people obviously, the other deviation being fast life history strategists. This can manifest in a number of ways. You can have people that are highly mentally unstable. People who are mentally unstable will see the world as a dangerous, unpleasant place. They will feel all kinds of negative feelings extremely strongly. Jealousy, anger, vengefulness, paranoia, whatever it happens to be. They will feel a strong sense that the world's against them. They have to take control of it. This will make that they will hate authority and power, anyone that has power over them, because they'll be so distrustful. They will, of course, therefore be Machiavellian, and they will want to have power. Another thing that you will see is narcissism. If you have a fundamental sense of fear and low self-esteem, that you're not worth much, then the way that you can deal with this is by telling yourself that you're absolutely fantastic and brilliant, and deservant of lots and lots of praise and power and authority. Another deviation from this is simply psychopathology. Psychopaths thrive in an unstable, dangerous environment. They are attracted to danger. They enjoy danger. They enjoy risk. They have no empathy for anybody else. So you can have all of these different deviations. Schizophrenia would be another one. This makes you utterly, utterly paranoid, and it makes you prone to believing that there is some sort of mendacious, you over-detect agency, such that you believe that behind events there's always some evil conspiracy that's trying to control you and whatever. These would all be the things that we would expect to increase as selection pressure. Remember, child mortality goes from 50% in 1800 to 1% today. So as all of these mutant genes that would have been washed out of the population are allowed to build up, that's what you would expect to happen. The result, over a very long period of time at the genetic level, would be a hollowing out of the middle and would be a rise in extremism. Now, there are other factors that relate to this as well. I've looked at in other videos, but basically you would have a hollowing out. You would have a higher and higher percentage of the population that were extreme in their, that were mentally unstable or were psychopathic or whatever, and thus were schizophrenic, and were thus extreme in their views, and they would alter the society at the general level, and they would alter the culture of the society such that it was far more extreme and far more low in trust. There are other factors that are relevant as well. Cycles of hormones within the population. There's all kinds of other factors that are relevant as well. But I think this is particularly germane. Now, the result of that is that the far left, the far right, and Islamist terrorists are of relatively similar psychology. We know that the far left, they are high in mental instability. They are high in mental instability, and therefore, as I noted earlier, at the extreme, this makes them highly Machiavellian. And also highly narcissistic. They desire power, and they will always be paranoid. So they will never believe that they actually are in power, even though they're running things, including forums like this. They will always believe that there's somebody else that's in power, some evil right-wing person or whatever it is, okay, who they won't trust. The extreme right, the radical right, they are high in psychopathic personality. The thing that attracts them is danger, and the thing that is dangerous, and is really dangerous at the moment, is being a dissident. So therefore, they are attracted to people that are high in psychopathic personality, seem to be attracted to the alt-right. And the people that are Islamic terror, the foreign terrorists, as it were, are a combination of these different factors. So they're all at the extremes, and they feed off each other. They feed off each other's radicalism. So if you wanted to stop far-right radicalism, you would crack down on the far left. Let's look at what the far left does. Well, you have a situation where you have critical race theory, which is teaching young boys to hate themselves or whatever. You would expect young boys to rebel against that and thus be pushed towards the far right. The praising of a far left, the denigrating of anybody that disagrees with the far left as a Nazi or whatever. The result of that is that you make a certain kind of person feel sympathy for the far right and feel drawn towards the far right. Censorship, of course, which they try to institute to halt the rise of what they see as the far right. What's that going to do? It's going to create paranoia. It's going to create a sense that the government have something to hide. It's going to make people start to question things. It's going to increase polarization. Clamping down on free speech again, it's going to make people who previously would have been moderate come to the conclusion that there's something that's against them, that there's something that's trying to destroy them, that there's something that they have to be scared of. It's going to increase polarization. So the way that you could stop, in a sense, the rise of the far right is to ban or at least to clamp down heavily on the far left. But that's not what happens. They will simply fuel each other. This will fuel a general sense of distrust. We have this rising distrust anyway for various reasons, including declining intelligence, because that makes us lower in trust. But it fuels paranoia. And then you get scandals of politicians who are on the make or whatever. You get lockdown. You get this increasingly wealthy elite. The result is growing distrust. And it's a general breakdown in the organisation and the bonds of society. This helps to create extremism, and this helps to create some people that are inclined to take terrorist action. Now, this fact itself, in a sense, the rise of the far right, will help to radicalise the far left. The far left will have their view that everything is to do with economic and social factors, and the fact that they're wrong. They can't cope with admitting that they're wrong because they're narcissistic and they're feeling that they're morally righteous is the only thing that avoids them having to look into the void, which is themselves. Deep down, they know they have low self-esteem and they know that they're very bad people and they're very Machiavellian people and they're full of hatred and jealousy and they're motivated by jealousy and anger. But they don't want people to realise that, and so they project out their negative feelings onto the far right in order to withdraw scrutiny from themselves. And so they always go on about these supposed evil people, and they will always find people to blame for the failure of their ideas, whether it's the kulaks or whatever. They are so high in schizophrenic traits, in paranoia and in over-detecting agency, that they will never ever be able to realise that they're in power. They will always think that there's the kulak that's in power or whatever that they have to fight, and they will have to fight because if they don't fight to morally signal and whatever, then they will be concerned that they won't get status. And remember, they're highly Machiavellian, and they will be concerned that they will be shown up for the dishonest, thoroughly unpleasant people that they are. And so, therefore, they will always find some group which they will cast as evil. In a way, it's no good arguing that they only do it for money, that they always want to find some enemy because it gives them money. I'm not sure that's right, because when they vanquished a certain element of the extreme right, they simply turned on the UK Independence Party, the group that was still present. So they must always find somebody to project their hatred and insecurity onto. Those are the kind of people that they are dealing with. Now, what this means is eventually they project their, as the Overton window is closed, they start projecting their hatred and insecurity and jealousy and envy onto perfectly ordinary people, onto perfectly, Jordan Peterson, purple-pilled people. Now, once that happens, you create even greater polarisation because you force really quite ordinary members of society who aren't even that extreme to take a side. So that there's no middle ground. You take a side. You either believe that differences in human accomplishment are partly biological in nature, or you absolutely don't. You must take a side. And so this helps to create further polarization and thus the potential for further terrorism. Now, what you then get with some people on the extreme right is a kind of accelerationism. You saw this in New Zealand with the attack on the mosque, this movement towards chaos. What you then see as a result, as a reaction on the far left, is simply more clamping down, more censorship, more destruction, more envy, more hatred. And a result of this, an example of this can be seen in the recent case of Ben John, who was found guilty of terrorism or whatever, or terrorist sympathy, because he had a copy of some manual that's perfectly legal on how to make bombs, but because he was associated with the far right or something, he was prosecuted for this and found guilty. The judge sentenced him that he had to read some traditional English literature, and that was that. Now, this wasn't good enough for Hope Not Hate, and they campaigned for him to have to go to prison, which they have now succeeded in doing. Why? I mean, it doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, that's not going to reform him. That's going to make him bitter. That's going to make him angry. That's going to make him more likely to get involved in some sort of politically oriented gang in prison. That's going to radicalise him. That's going to make him more likely to become even more polarised, even more far right. Why do they do that? Well, it's because they're not motivated by logic or reason. It's because they're motivated by hatred. They're paranoid that such a person, unless they have a Damascene conversion and admit utter adherence to their leftist dogmas, is an enemy of them and whatever, and so that person has to be destroyed. They can't cope with the idea that that person gets a light sentence. What's the result of that is he is much more likely to be radicalised than he would previously have been. So all of this coming together means that you're going to get this massive increase in terrorism. Basically, you have three groups of people that are evolved to a fast life history strategist. They are evolved to an environment of chaos. They are evolved to an environment of instability, an environment of violence, an environment of utter hell, and they thrive in that kind of environment because they're fast life history strategists. They're mentally unstable, or they're psychopaths, or they're narcissists, or whatever. And so they will try to create that environment. They are programmed to create an environment in which they thrive, and so they will play off each other, hollow out the middle, and create a situation where basically you have to take sides. You must take sides. There is polarization, and that will increase terrorism, and ultimately, potentially, it will make things extremely unpleasant. Now, of course, you've got the intelligence agencies that are meant to monitor this and stop this, but we can imagine that because of the Machiavellianism of the far left, it's almost certainly the case that the intelligence agencies are advised by the woke. They are advised by Hope Not Hate, perhaps, certainly by woke people with humanities degrees. And those people are going to be basically arguing that anything that is left of the Labour Party is potentially terrorism. And so therefore they're going to be overwhelmed by all these possibilities of terrorism with people like this guy, this Ben John guy, who's not a terrorist at all. He's just a young chap with silly ideas. And therefore all kinds of potential terrorists could slip through the net. Because they're overwhelmed by being told by these politically motivated woke people working for them that, oh, this is a terrorist, this is a terrorist. This will set off a sort of Darwinian evolution whereby the terrorists will become better at disguising what they're doing, better at hiding their intentions, and so it will select out all the chaff, and you'll only get the best ones that will survive that process, and you will end up, I suspect, with a kind of Northern Ireland situation in which there is more and more and more terrorist outrages. It probably, one of the things that's quite interesting in a low IQ society, you have to have a certain degree of intelligence to be politically involved and to have ideals. And one of the things that's noticeable with these kinds of politically oriented riots is they end up degenerating into looting. That's what you would expect in a low IQ society, really. It's just about terror. It's just about violence and looting and wanting things. But anyway, that's what we would expect. Whether it would be pushed to a sort of civil war situation is unclear. And if you think about it could be argued that we're moving to a similar situation to the English Civil War. In the English Civil War, essentially, it was so polarised that you had to take a side. There was a fundamental question. You are either with the king or you are with Parliament. There's no middle ground. You either support the king or you support Parliament. You either support Calvinist Protestantism or you support Anglo-Catholicism or proto-Anglo-Catholicism. It's one or the other. And we are increasingly moving towards a situation where that is it. It's one or the other. You either support woke ideology, which says that everything is to do with environment and whatever, that people are all fundamentally equal and the same, and there is no biological contribution to why people are different from each other, or you, at least most of the time, or you support the view that there is some sort of biological contribution, even the most Peterson-pilled kind of idea. It's one or the other. And that's what we're moving towards, this extreme polarisation. And the result is likely to be growing terrorism, which we're going to have to get used to, which will result in more clampdowns, which will result in more terrorism, which will result in more clampdowns, which will result in more terrorism, as these fast life history strategists play off against each other until the situation is so intolerable that there is a strong... that either society breaks down and balkanises, and you expect intelligent people, often intelligent slow life history strategy people, to escape, to get out of the West or at least create enclaves of normality in the West, to fend off the chaos by which they are surrounded. Or, I think less likely, for there to be some sort of K-strategy sort of backlash which takes control of the situation and stabilises things. Now, personally, I think we've gone too far for that. I think that we're in the winter of civilization for various reasons. I've looked at in other videos. And so what we would expect to happen is it would be the breakdown, it would be the balkanisation of nations, and there would be an escape from this chaos of intelligent conservative people. And that is what I will look at in a forthcoming book. Well, I hope this is a bit of interest. If it has, then please subscribe. It really helps me if you do that. Please help support the channel, which you can see to do ways to do so below. If you'll see below, there are also ways you can meet up IRL. And I will see you soon, and goodbye!